Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and time, lords. I'm going to try and modify that intro every week just to snazz things up. I think it will it'll at least wake me up if I haven't had coffee, and it'll wake some of you wonderful, wonderful listeners up if you've been dozing off patiently waiting for the episode. This week, we talk about Before the Flood, the fourth episode of the ninth season or series of Doctor Who. I am Dolly Domofsky. Also with me, the one, the only, Marcus Beer.
Yellow.
We hope to be joined by Stephen here soon. I think he was having some computer issues, connectivity issues. And then Sean is out on vacation. I'm hoping he'll get his thoughts over to me. He actually wasn't able to watch the episode. He was flying out to the East Coast. And yeah, he just replied that he hasn't watched it. So, Stephen has replied that he's having issues. So we'll do our best without them. Marcus,
so you
and I.
Be Sean and I'll be Stephen.
There you go. Yeah,
exactly. I'll be Sean.
Oh, I love Moffat. He's awesome. Oh, Moffat is so brilliant in everything he does.
And I'll be Stephen. You know, there's a the dichotomy that we have to dissect here. I'm not quite convinced that. Okay, no, I'll stop. I'm not 6'2" and Swedish and blonde, so I'll leave that for Stephen. Yes, so the episode this week, Before the Flood. Before the Flood, just a quick bit of news, as per our new-ish cleaned-up format. This week, the release of Big Finish's Doom Coalition 1. So Doom Coalition is going to be four episodes of Stephen is here.
I'm going to try.
All right. So it wasn't me, Stephen. It was you all along. It was Earth this whole time.
You can check Twitter.
I know. I saw that. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello, dear.
Hi.
All right. We were just getting into the quick bit of news that Doom Coalition, which is the four-part serial of the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann, the first part has been released by Big Finish. I believe it's going to be weekly. Don't quote me on it, but if you're in the U.S., you can buy it for $20. That's always a positive. And definitely check it out. We are going to be reviewing it here. Probably going to be talking about it on the next episode of Lonely TARDIS. Maybe we might do a quick little write-up or something. We're not sure, but it's great to see Paul. It's voiced by Paul McGann, so it's wonderful to have him actually back as the Good Doctor. So stay tuned for that wonderful conversation we'll be having over the next few weeks here. And let's just dive into Before the Flood. So last week we spoke about Under the Lake, which was the flooded kind of laboratory, and yada yada, you heard all that. This week, we've come to find out that the Fisher King is the one behind all the deaths and all the ghosts, and he's been amplifying everything. The more ghosts he creates, the closer he gets to bringing the army to invade Earth. This episode is set in 1980, I believe it was, and it's set in an Irish town?
Scottish town.
Sorry, Scottish town, thank you. A Scottish town that was set up to look like a Russian town during the height of the Cold War, so there was a lot of training going on at that time. So, and that's kind of the summary, the synopsis. The Doctor and O'Donnell and I forget the third character were whisked away to the past, and they have to find out why this whole calamity happened in the first place. So, I want to get your initial thoughts on the episode, and then we'll kind of dive into a little bit more of the nitty gritty. So I'm gonna jump in. Sean's not here, but I may take the torch and be the ultra positive person this week. I was a little hesitant last week. I loved Under the Lake. I thought it was really well done, but I was just like a lot of people out there in Twitter land that were sending us messages. We wanted to wait to find out what the second half of two-part episode was like before we gave our final thoughts. Second half came, and I absolutely loved this episode. Absolutely loved this episode. To me, this is classic Doctor Who of what I know of Doctor Who. Obviously, it's, Marcus has more of a history with Who, and Steven's much more caught up than I am. But to me, this was the crazy time travel, the time paradox, the terrifying, absolutely terrifying monsters, great acting, some cool little bits of technology, and I totally enjoyed this episode, and I was so excited by it. And I was telling Marcus before the show that I had my daughter sit with me. She's just about to turn 6. I wasn't quite sure how she was going to take it. I had to explain the previous episode that they're ghosts, but they're not really ghosts. They're holograms. And so this episode, she sat down and she watched with me and really enjoyed it. And I was pretty happy about that. So all around, the Domofsky household thoroughly enjoyed this episode. What about you? What about you, fine gentlemen? Did you like this episode as much as I did? I'm gonna ask Marcus, because you have the history. This was my Doctor Who. This is what I want out of a Doctor Who episode. What about you? Did this meet your expectations?
It did definitely feel like a classic Who episode.
Cool.
I mean, that's, you know, 80s period. I mean, I was half expecting Ace to turn up in a bomber jacket. Mm-hmm. And that was great. I really enjoyed the episode. I read a few reviews online where people have been very critical of it. And look, it's not the perfect episode. And it's right. One of those really strange experiences where you could drive several TARDISes through the plot holes.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are numerous and there are many, but it's just so much fun.
Yes.
That's what this season of Who has over last year. There was a couple of fun episodes last year. I mean, I know people didn't like the fact that the moon was actually a baby dragon. I thought that was fun. We all agreed that the sort of like the 2D murals coming to life and sucking people away, the flat people, that was a great episode. And I think the episodes where Who took itself way too seriously last season were just miserable. And then I even kind of enjoyed the Robots of Sherwood last year, because it was silly and it was fun, and and that's what this one felt like. Silly and fun. Great two-part story. I think somebody predicted that the Doctor would be the one in the time capsule.
That was me. Probably you.
That was actually me.
It wasn't me. Mad props to Stephen for getting that right. And, I mean, you know, it was one of those ones where you could see what was going to happen about 5 minutes before it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing, there was no intricate twists and turns. There were no major surprises. We knew that the two couples there were, you know, who were still surviving up until one of them died, were in love with each other. The hologram thing at the end was kind of amusing. The Fisher King looked scary. And it's interesting. I'm not sure if it was spelled Fisher as in to fish, or Fisher as in a hole in the ground,
yes.
You know, a crack in the ground. But yeah, he was kind of scary. I loved the scene between him and the Doctor in that dark, room where the life support system was, and the light was coming in, and he towered over the Doctor, and the Doctor was like pretending to be, you know, scared. And then we saw the bravado come back, and it was the rope-a-dope.
It was really nicely lit, that scene. You're totally right on with that. Just they were almost silhouetted against the background.
Yeah, and I mean, when the, you know, and then to flip that a little bit, you see him come out to go back to his ship, mm-hmm. and he's not as scary in the light.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
right.
Almost like if you turned all the lights on in the movie Alien, would they be that scary under a bright neon light? I mean, you know, maybe they
probably would be. Yeah.
But yeah, it was just fun. I liked it, and I like this Clara.
Mm-hmm.
She's turning into a bit of a psycho. I mean, she's very happy sending people off to their doom, as is this version of the Doctor.
There was a great line that I forget the one. I think it was the deaf scientist. I forget her name, but she mentions that you know she sends that that one scientist out to retrieve the phone, and the deaf girl says, "Well, why are you've been around the doctor apparently far too long because you're so apathetic towards sending people out to sacrificing others to escape or whatever to commit to your plan," which is kind of interesting. And you start to think, wow, you know what? Never really picked up on that. We talk about people dying in Doctor Who episodes, but it was very blatant. Like, she totally called her out and said, "Why do you keep sending all those people out to die to do your bidding just so that you could survive?" You know?
Yeah. And then, the doctor, obviously, when we got to the big twist that, what the list of names the doctor was reading out and, or his ghost was reading out, mm-hmm. and did he test the theory out that it was a list of people dying in which order, and he wanted to change it before it got to Clara? Yeah. That was very cold of him. He made a half-assed attempt to keep the girl in the TARDIS, but then was like, "Oh well, if you're gonna die, you're gonna die." Yeah. It was interesting. I love the fact that they actually put, they got the scientific name in the bootstrap paradox, mm-hmm. Sure a lot of people Googled it, because I did as soon as the
episode. Which is great, because he told us to, so I did it.
Yeah, I thought it was maybe, just a Moffitism or a Toby Whitehouseism, but no, it's a bona fide thing, and, that does make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's chicken and egg.
Yeah.
Which came first? And, that just that little bit of grounded realism, mm-hmm. they've thrown in with regards to that, how science views it, was just, just a little cherry on the cake. So, yeah, I thumbs up. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed the two-parter.
Stephen, before we get into a lot of the nitty-gritty details, I want to hear your overall impression of the episode.
I immediately liked it a lot more than I liked last week's episode, okay. Which was not too tough considering how I felt about last week's episode. I didn't get a chance to go back and rewatch it, the first part that is, before this one, which I wanted to do to see if it would be, because it was, you guys were like, after we had the discussion last week, there was more and more people telling me that they really liked that episode, people who are generally pretty pessimistic about the show right now. So I don't know, I haven't gotten a chance to go back and rewatch the first episode, but I immediately liked this one better. I think I was a little bit let down with the reveal of the Fisher King and everything. Cause the doctor isn't just going to, in reality wouldn't just be wrong all the time, but the fact that he kind of guessed it in the first episode and it was just like, oh, it's just, yeah, they're a signal being sent for an alien invasion. I was kind of hoping for more. I was kind of hoping for some twist, you always hope for some kind of twist on these things. That said, I thought the Fisher King was a cool villain, but like Marcus said, the minute he's out in the lights, it's like, oh yeah, it's the BBC, so they have amazing artistic design, but they don't really have either the chops or the budget to make it move in a really interesting way. So its mouth just kind of flaps a little bit, and it can't really raise its arms. It's very stiff. It's got this gun that you never really see it use. It just kind of hangs limply at its side, which disappears in one shot and then reappears in its hand later on in one scene when he's standing in front of the dam as it's breaking and watching it happen. You see him standing there without the gun, and in the next shot he has the gun in his hand. but overall I liked it a lot more. I do the doctor's being an asshole with letting that woman die, and on the one hand, it's more of the doctor being an asshole, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I do like that finally somebody, even though it wasn't who I wanted, which is Clara, called him out on it and said something like, "Yo, you're a fucking, you're kind of a piece of shit. Why does everybody like you if you're, such an asshole?" It didn't go anywhere with it, but if we're building towards something on that, maybe. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not building somewhere, we had somebody acknowledge it, it doesn't necessarily have to go somewhere as long as it is a part of the pathos or a part of the mythos that it is that this doctor's just kind of a jerk. That was nice. But yeah, more or less, I was just the one thing that disappointed me was just that oh yeah, it was exactly what he said it was going to be. It's this big bad guy who looks awesome, don't get me wrong, and he's got a cool voice, and the Fisher King is a cool name, even though it doesn't really make a ton of sense, if you're connecting it to Arthurian legend or whatever.
Right.
But just like the interactions with characters, I thought was much stronger this episode than it was previously, which is, I think, a really strong suit of Toby Whitehouse in general.
Yep.
If you go back and watch like Being Human and stuff like that. Very good at that sort of thing. And like instantly with the Kit Prentice, I think was the rat person.
Prentice, yeah.
Civilians or whatever. Like, I loved him. He was great. Mm-hmm. Like, he was like he was annoying as shit, but like, that was the whole point. They like played that off perfectly in a way that it was like, had a lot of energy and like it almost made me wonder. And like this is somebody I was again talking to somebody else that I had talked to previously, or after our episodes last week. I was trying to pin down what I don't like about what I didn't like about the previous episode, part one. And I think it was partially just because like the Doctor has been so pared down at this point, like his personality, his look, his style, like it's also like, I mean, Peter Capaldi has gone on record and said when he, you know, had his input on what the Doctor's costume should look like, he said that he wanted it to look like something that anybody could buy, anybody who was a fan of Doctor Who, they could buy this suit, this costume of his, whatever, and wear it, you know, at any point in like any shop, they could just walk in, mm-hmm. pick up his stuff and look like the Doctor. And you take that and you like mix it in with the fact that like Peter Capaldi plays like a much more subdued Doctor. And it just like, I wonder if like the reason I had problems with the characters not having a lot to like say and not bouncing off very well is just because he's so low energy and like there's so little, the Doctor doesn't like absorb a whole room the way he used to. And you know, maybe mm-hmm. that's just me, but I don't feel like he has that same commanding presence that he always does. Like he doesn't draw attention to himself in quite the same way. But when you added in like Prentice, like this, that whoever that actor was, just like had a big just injection of energy on the show, and like it played off perfectly against Capaldi's like more subdued tone and everything like that, because everybody hates this guy. He's like the most energetic person on screen, but everybody else being like really like up, like just kind of pissed off with him and kind of quiet and just like not wanting to really interact with him mm-hmm. actually worked. So I think that was part of it, and so it was, you know, sad to see him go, but like. It made sense for the episode and stuff like that. But yeah, like I think that pretty much well encompasses everything. Like I'm a little bit disappointed with like kind of a stand, like a very bog standard reveal on like the Fisher King, but mm-hmm. you know, for a bog standard reveal, I thought he was a very effective villain and like, you know, a little bit more energy in this episode in general. So yeah, good stuff. I won't say it like completely redeemed the first episode for me, because again, I need to go back and rewatch it, but I was happy with how it ended.
Cool. Yeah, what was interesting, and you brought up Toby Whitehouse. He, so the Tivolian race first appeared in the God Complex. I'm just looking through Wikipedia right now.
Another Toby Whitehouse episode, yeah.
Another Toby Whitehouse episode. And he mentioned how the they were liberated from the Fisher King's people by the glorious Arcatinians, who were first mentioned in the Torchwood episode, Greeks Bearing Gifts, also a Toby Whitehouse written episode. So it's, I find that actually kind of cool that Toby Whitehouse is kind of creating his own little worlds and characters within Doctor Who that are just his alone.
I love that. I love that when you see a character like a writer or a producer or somebody like yeah. that on the show, like reference back to their own little stuff. And he's not the first one to do it, but he's the right. first one that comes to mind. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. There were a lot of neat things I loved about this episode. There was tons of great little touches. I love the, of course, I mean, I love Prentice. I'm also sad to see him go, but I'm hopeful that we'll get more Tivolians in Doctor Who coming up. But he showed the business card, and I had to pause because I saw something scrawled in the business card, and I thought, you know, I wondered if that was going to be anything important. So I paused it and walked, you know, got up close to the TV, and the card had the motto, "May the remorse be with you," which I thought was just perfect timing. Just snuck in there. You know, obviously May the Force be with you. So it was just a really nice touch. To me, the big hook for me this episode was that kind of the Doctor talking to himself and from the past to the future. He's talking to his quote-unquote ghost, trying to figure out why that ghost is there. We come to find out that it's actually a hologram, and the Doctor's been watching, you know, been essentially surviving through this ghost for 130-odd years or so while he's been in suspended animation. So the Doctor is 130 years older, I guess. Is that a safe way to say it? You know, I thought that use of technology was really cool. And it reminded me of Blink, where the Doctor and I think it was Martha at the time were talking to the folks in the present day through a VHS tape, telling them what to do and affecting the future and affecting how they get back to the future. So I love that type of time interplay, you know, and it's it we have these two timelines, and then we have a stupid iPhone 5. This is the first time we had an iPhone, I think, on the show, like at least so blatantly, right? It's usually like some generic smartphone. But they straight
some
up
generic smartphone. It's probably a real smartphone, Dally. You just don't know it because it's not.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. But this was obviously a really blatant, iPhone usage. I mean, they're FaceTiming at one point, which is really funny. But at the same time, it's almost it makes it that much more believable, you know. So he explains the time paradox with Beethoven's Fifth, and then he rocked out with that electric guitar. He rocks out Beethoven's Fifth, and it directly leads into the title sequence and merged all together audio-wise. I loved it. I'm going to try to rip that.
Right, with the guitar rendition of the guitar arrangement.
Yep. Yeah, I thought that was actually really
good. It actually made the theme tune, which for the, you know, since Capaldi took over, has been horrible plinky blonky crap, much better. I could definitely go for a nice rock doc.
Rock doc, I like that. I'm going to try to rip that ring, make it a ringtone if I can, but I thought that was great. It was a nice little touch.
I thought it was a great touch. I'm still kind of on the fence on how I feel about, like, the guitar thing as, like, an affectation. Like, with the guitar and the glasses and stuff like that, like, I just – obviously, like, they're kind of – I'm not sure what they're 100% going for, if they're, like, trying to make it seem like it's – like if they're trying to create this like dichotomy, this weird like he's a very subdued doctor with like very normal clothes and everything like that, but then he also is this weird like rock and roll dad. Like I don't know if it's supposed to look goofy or
rock and roll dad.
Like seriously, like he's just
that's
like,
true. Yeah, you're right.
He's just like dad as fuck. Like he's just
I'm glad you're pointing that out because I think it ties into last season, and one of the biggest issues we had with last season was the doctor kept asking, you know, am I a good man? Who am I? Am I a bad man? We never fucking knew till the end of the season. We didn't know what he was. You know, it was so up and down. The doctor had no real there was no real idea behind it. They just kind of cast Capaldi and let him do his thing. But this season, you're right. It's a rock dad this season. I'm totally fine with that. It's like he's reliving his he's reliving his own personal 60s, going from night or bar to bar, watching rock bands and trying his hand in the bass.
He just doesn't. I don't know. He just doesn't feel earnest enough in it in this weird way. And I'm not sure if that's intentional or unintentional. Like he doesn't feel like his heart is necessarily behind it. Cause he's so quiet. So hearts, his hearts aren't really into it. Yeah. In it. Yeah. You're right. Fucking goddamn it. I missed it. I should have had it and I missed it.
Yep.
But yeah, his heart doesn't necessarily seem like it's in it. Like when he's he's on the guitar in the first episode of the season, he's like all sad and mopey and weepy about everything because he thinks he's going to die, which turned out to be a ruse anyway. And in this one, he's like giving this very like subdued, Carl Sagan style, Cosmos style, like talk about everything like that while he's also rocking out on the guitar, but he's not like, there's so little energy behind it. And again, I'm not sure if it's intentional because I feel like he needs to like really, really, really be into it. I feel like if he was really into it, I would understand it better. And I'm not sure if they're going somewhere with that or what. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird little thing to me that I haven't decided how I feel about yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just overall, I loved the town that they're in. You know, this it felt like Chernobyl. This empty Russian Cold War era town, even though we know it was a Scottish town, it was set up to, you know, for training, but it was kind of tied in. So you had the Russian dead town, and then you had the alien, the claustrophobia of the, you know, alien horrors in the future underwater. And I thought it was really nice set pieces. Obviously, you know, they did it with minimal budget as usual. But I thought it was just nicely done and very, very well designed and visually very striking as well, especially when that Dr. Fisher King scene takes place. And at least in this episode, the sonic sunglasses had a purpose. Last episode, they were just stupid sonic sunglasses. I know the majority of people don't like the sonic sunglasses. I'm not necessarily one of those yet, but I'm kind of leaning in that camp, but at least this episode, they kind of had a purpose. So I didn't hate them as much.
I still hate them.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like, that is one part. Okay, no, I take everything I just said back. That is one part of the affectation that I know I don't like.
I did speak to, so Susan Arendt was going to be on This Week Again. Just two episodes she's missed out. Susan! But she did have an interesting comment. See, she said that the Fisher King was in bandages in the hearse, right? But what was the stasis chamber for if he was just in bandages?
Yeah, on top of the stasis chamber?
On top of the stasis chamber, yeah. So
this is the whole thing about the plot holes. And why would the Fisher King, if he is going off to be buried, why would he be in a stasis chamber anyway?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The plot holes, there are many. Well, but it's one of those ones that you don't think about too much. You just enjoy.
Well, I think it went back to something that the Fisher King said, which was he was going to keep killing people. Well, he was gonna kill someone, make them a ghost, and let that ghost kind of keep multiplying to help with, you know, make the antennas, I guess, the living antennas or dead antennas. So I think he was dead or some, you know, faking being dead in these bandages. And then once he made that ghost, I'm thinking he was intending to hop into the stasis chamber and didn't just wait until his people showed up. So that in the back of my mind, that's what the stasis chamber was for, was after he killed someone and created ghosts. But that's all I can think of.
I don't know. Like that, everything about that whole like. I think maybe that was part of why I had kind of a problem with the reveal in general. It's just like it seemed like it all seemed incredibly complicated for like such a simple reveal. I think the reveal was kind of a little bit basic. Mm-hmm. and maybe a basic reveal would have been fine, I think, actually, if it hadn't been built up to in such a weird roundabout way. It's just so convoluted for a lot of a plan. Like, why does he need ghosts to create a signal transmission? Like, why is like his species the one species in all of the universe that need, like, doesn't just have, like, you know, telecommunications or something like that, like the Daleks or the, you know, the Cybermen or whoever, you know, whatever alien race you want. Like, we have never, like, really encountered somebody with this weird, like, need for this thing. I don't know, and it seemed weird. He himself didn't even, like, his, like, the letters being this, like, beacon and everything like that, like, it just seemed like a kind of a weird thing for a guy whose big threat is that he has a gun, you know, like, mm-hmm. he's like a Centauran with he's a Centauran with a torso, and it just, I don't know, it seemed like too much for too little.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, the Centauran reference is kind of spot on for Prentice. I kind of like that. So, I mean, overall, I think there was a lot of positive feedback about this episode. And Marcus said it best when you mentioned how much fun we're kind of having with this season. And it was definitely lacking last season. But I think the majority of these episodes so far, there's just been four. Granted, we're almost halfway through the season. But they've been pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly like this season better than I liked where we were last season at mm-hmm. this point. Like, I thought last season started off pretty strong with that first episode. I think Don't Breathe was actually fairly, you know, like, I think that was a good episode, more mm-hmm. or less. And it definitely got some excuses for us not knowing who Peter Capaldi was at this point. You know, a regeneration episode, you don't know what to expect, and that was kind of, I think, fine. They handled that just fine. This season, I think, has maintained for longer. As much as I didn't like last episode, I think that this is a fine cap to that story, mm-hmm. Which is better than I can say for, like, all but maybe two of last season's episodes.
Yep, very true, very true. Final thoughts on this episode from you, fine gentlemen, before I turn it over to some of our great listener comments.
Oh, I dug it. Yeah, great two-parter. I mean, that's two, you know, pretty good two-parters on the bounce now. It didn't perhaps disappoint as much as the end of the last two-parter, which, you know, I had some issues with, in that it just seemed to go Lord of the Rings with the five endings. Mm-hmm. So yeah, look, thumbs up. I mean, it was fun, Doctor Who, and that's what we need. I mean, you know, there's people who are sort of like dropping away from Doctor Who ever since Capaldi appeared, because it's not somebody cute and it's not somebody with a skinny boy in a suit or a big chin or whatever. And to them, I say, fuck off. You're not welcome anyway. We don't need you. And I predicted this would happen. And, you know, this is one of the things. I mean, I think last season, like I said, mediocre. This season, a lot stronger and just more enjoyable. And that's what it's about. You want to enjoy Doctor Who. And, definitely. You know, if you think about it too much, you'll get cockeyed. So just enjoy it.
All right, I'm going to throw in some comments and questions from our wonderful audience. Postmodern Dad says about the episode last week, Under the Flood, or Under the Lake, he says, this was a good episode because Moffat didn't write it, which I thought was a. All right, someone's turning on their PS4 over there, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it to a place where it's not making noise right now.
Kostich, valid member society, says, question for you. How much influence or input do you think Capaldi has on stories or direction of the show?
None.
Yeah, I didn't think either. He's probably more focused on just the Doctor's mannerisms, I'd say, probably, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird question for us just because we're not, like, close to the production of the show at all like that. All we can go on, basically, is what we know from the past. And, you know, all I've ever, like, not that I follow every single thing, but I can tell you at the very least that he had some input on the Doctor's, like, clothing choice. And obviously, true. Capaldi's always going to have input on how the Doctor comes across. Just, like, you can take, you know, delivery is very important. So you can take something that the Doctor is going to say, you know, in one way or another, and take it a completely different way. I pointed that out last week with the episode with the Doctor talking about how he wanted to kiss it to death, you know, talking about the weird impossible thing. And, you know, if that had been Matt Smith saying that, it would have been like this, he would have been incredibly light and airy and, you know, had a lot of fun with it. And you would have gotten a very different impression than what you got from Capaldi, who like almost had like a certain sinister vibe to him. He almost sounded like he almost sounded like he had like forgotten about everybody else in the room in a certain way, mm-hmm. and like cared more about this like weird curiosity, like a mad scientist, than he did about the human life, which is exactly what this Doctor has been doing, like from episode to episode. Like he's more curious and more interested in to see what's going to happen than he is about like whether or not the people around him are going to survive. And I don't like that, but that's the place that they're taking it.
A few more, actually Kostich also says, why doesn't the TARDIS translate sign language?
That's another good question. Like apparently we know it can translate text, so it clearly has a visual element to it, so
the BBC doesn't have the friggin' budget.
I wonder how you would like. I mean, all you'd have to do, I guess, is like put sub. I mean, that's one way to get around it, I guess, is just to put up subtitles, right? Like every time the Doctor or Clara is looking at somebody with sign language, just subtitles, and you see what they're saying.
But then, I mean, it just takes out a key part of the story in the signing guy.
Yeah.
Because he would then stop whenever she's communicating with the Doctor, and you know, I mean, I think, He explained it in the last episode, or in the first part, where you know he deleted it, but he now knows semaphore, which is flags.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to wave a flag and do SOS, but he doesn't know the sign language. So I think that was a great way around it. I mean, if you know, the other thing is the TARDIS didn't translate the Fisher King's scribblings either.
Sure, true.
You know, there's some things perhaps that the TARDIS can't do, and I like that there's some things the TARDIS can't do and can't translate everything, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons that this was a good episode and it wasn't written by Moffat, because you know, again, don't forget Moffat's the guy who a while back the Doctor and Amy went to the very beginning of the universe, the Diamond Wall, and the message as old as time, and the TARDIS translated it and it said hello sweetie. You know, and it was from River Song. And that was just like, all right, that was a fun laugh little moment. But the TARDIS translating everything, the sonic screwdriver being a cure for all ills. I mean, I do like the fact that, you know, he's got away from the sonic, you're using the sonic for everything.
Right.
That I really do like. I just wish it was still a screwdriver as opposed to some granddad glasses.
Kostich, I'm going to close with his last comment. He says he loved it. Capaldi had great lines and he actually had something to do. Good story. He says, they have done a bad job of making us care for Clara. I agree with this. I know, Marcus, you thought she was great or thought she was good. I have not been into Clara at all this season. She just kind of seemed.
I like that, though. And that's the thing. I like that I'm not into her. I like that she has stepped away from being the, you know, sort of like the doughy-eyed girl weeping over a boyfriend and weeping over, you know, the doctor turning from, you know, chinny McBig ears into eyebrows. I think this is a new Clara that is closed off. Mm-hmm. This is a Clara that is kind of cold in a lot of ways. This is a Clara that's a lot harder. And this is a nice evolution of the character. And I think that in itself is great. I don't think we have to like Clara this season. We have to feel a little bit uncomfortable by her.
Clara put the evil in evolution, at least for this season. Chris Noonan, at Noonham, writes, as a metalhead, I really appreciated the intro. Predictable ending, I think we all kind of agree, but executed rather well. I think we all kind of agree with that too. Absolutely love how they wrote Cass and her conclusion. Great episode. He says, also, I can't politely say what that monster's face resembles. Awesome design otherwise. Hope the season can keep this up. I'm just going to say it's a predator. I was going to say it's a predator face. Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
It reminded me more of the bird people from the Dark Crystal, whatever the hell they're called.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
The Skeksis, yeah.
I mean, I know it could also be, you know, a George O'Keefe painting.
Great cat. Both of you. Oh, my God.
There you go.
I'm going to have to Photoshop that to make it our album artwork. Good friend Annalie at Sublevel 28 says.
Oh, not Annalie again. Come on.
Says, the start confused me at first, but by the end, I loved it. Made the brain fire up harder. Good part, too, with some rule boundary pushing. Interesting creature. Beginning to think we're heading to Adric land with Clara now. Volatile she is. And post modern dad says, felt very Third Doctor-ish. I approve. That's a very astute point. Third Doctor-ish. There's been a lot of love for that Third Doctor in these last, the Third, Fourth Doctor in these last few seasons.
If Capaldi is like anybody, he is like the Third Doctor. If you go totally back to Pertwee was like the asshole to everybody kind of thing. But he was an asshole to everybody, but not in quite the same way. I don't know if it's they're just taking that lesson incorrectly, but like he was an asshole in the sense that he like a school teacher that wanted you to learn something and but got frustrated when you didn't already know what he thought you should know. But he didn't let people die.
True.
If you can help it.
He also says, in the cold open, I want to know where the time traveler got the sheet music for Beethoven to sign in the first place. Doesn't really matter. I think it was just, you know, again, chicken and egg type of thing.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, he would just have sheet music. I don't think it was like Beethoven's original sheet music. It was just like a printing or something like that.
Exactly. And he says, and after some deliberation, Clara is my least favorite of the new Who companions, supplanting Martha. Those are strong words. I gotta say, those are strong.
Hang on. Who said that Martha is not the least favorite anymore? Are you mental?
At PPM Dad, at post-postmodern Dad.
Come on, dude. I mean. Look at her over this is her fourth season,
mm-hmm.
or third season, whatever it is. She had a full on season with,
Third season.
Yeah. So third season. So first season, she got hamstrung by Moffat's lack of being able to finish a fucking story. The impossible girl popping in and out, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, okay, what? Actually, this is a fourth season.
Yeah.
Fourth season, isn't it?
Fourth season of Moffat? I thought we were talking about Martha.
No, I'm not talking about Clara. Clara's fourth season. Gotcha. But anyway, you know, we had this really interesting thing with the Impossible Girl where she jumped into the timeline and then all of a sudden she was out of the timeline and it just really didn't, you know, we'd got no explanation. And then last season we had, you know, we had Danny Pink and her trying to come to grips with the Doctor, and she was actually one of the strongest parts of last year.
Mm-hmm.
She really was because she was dealing with the loss of, you know, the guy she might have fancied. And then this new guy comes in and she's leading this double life, and this new, you know, the new guy who is, you know, her old guy, but with a new face is cuckoo for Go-Go Puffs. So it's a totally different, you know, I mean, each season's been a journey. And I think, you know, she got hampered by really bad writing with the Impossible Girls story.
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct.
Season, you know, where she's still dealing with her grief, and is sort of like closed down, is a great evolution. And you got to look at it that way. I don't think, you know, is she kind of similar to the Doctor in a lot of ways? She's taken on a lot of his characteristics, but I mean, you know, she's certainly better. She's more enjoyable than Rose, who was just basically a lovesick Muppet who turned into a commando. She's more, certainly more enjoyable to, you know, to enjoy the arc more than Rebound Girl, which was Martha, who was another lovesick puppy who turned into this uber scientist, head of unit, blah, 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 blah. Thank you, Russell T. Davis.
And then disappeared forever.
You know, the Ponds had their ups and their numerous downs. But I think, you know, Clara's, she's holding her own, and she's had to hold her own, and hopefully she gets a strong send-off.
That's what I worry about the most, is just, like, what's going to happen to her when this is all said and done. Like, because I think Jenna Coleman just deserves to have, like, something good. You know, not necessarily, like, something positive in her, like, ending or anything. I mean, like, a good moment, a good story, a good finale. Because, like, I mean, for a lot of her tenure, she has been kind of, like, holding things down. Like, she's been, like, you know, even when the story's been weak and stuff like that, and when Capaldi wasn't quite sure where he was going, or they weren't sure where they wanted to take Capaldi or whatever in the last season, like, she was a bright spot during a lot of it.
She was his caregiver, for God's sake.
Exactly, yeah. Literally, like, you know, metaphorically and literally, yeah.
So I think we all agree that Martha is still the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, we could go back into, like, the olden days and whatnot and find somebody, I'm sure, but of the new stuff.
Well, she's certainly not as annoying as Tegan.
Tegan, there you go.
Or what was the other one? The the ginger one during the McCoy, the end of the was it the Davidson one? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
The ginger one with a really annoying laugh.
Yeah, you got me there. Hair.
I wiped it from my brain because she was a huge celebrity in the sort of like the 70s and the 80s.
Oh, did you have the very, very curly hair?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, but I do not remember the name at all.
I've wiped her from my memory, just like, you know, I've unlearned it. So there's been some stinkers. There have been some stinkers. Adric obviously was another one, but I would say
Adric. Yeah.
You know, I'd like for them to, you know, maybe give her a noble sacrifice.
Yeah, I think that would be the right thing to do. They had the chance at the end of last season with the Christmas episode, but. Yeah, hopefully this time they actually go through with it. But we still got a lot of season 9 to go through before we see her story develop, and I'm sure it will. I hope it will. But that being said, that's kind of the end of the episode for this week. It was a wonderful chat. A little bit of a shorter episode. Not having Sean on here, I think, anchored us all back to reality. Just kidding, Sean. We love you. Before we sign off, I do want to get your ratings. So let's say out of Tivolian hearses. There you go. I was gonna say something much worse. Out of Tivolian hearses, what would you rate this episode, Stephen?
I would. Yeah, you know, I'm gonna go with a 3.5. Like, I wasn't blown away by anything, but. I loved it, you know, in comparison to the previous episode, I thought it was great. And, a weak kind of reveal that was executed well, like the you know the plot point itself wasn't that exciting, but like if everything was executed well there. I still think kind of suffered a little bit from being a two-parter that I didn't quite love the first part of. And you know, still not in love with like Murder Doctor, who just you know lets everybody die around him, like actually knows who the next person is going to die is, and just lets it happen. Like I just don't not in love with it. But overall, good, good episode.
Cool, Marcus.
I'm gonna give it 4.75 hearses.
Ooh.
Out of five. I thought, yeah, like I said, great two-parter. Worked really well. Lots of great little touches. Plot holes you could drive a bus through, and they were glorious.
Yeah.
Glorious. I mean, I'm fed up of nitpicking on Doctor Who. I'm not doing it anymore. And I just enjoyed it. And that's, you know, that's four episodes in, and I've overall enjoyed more, you know, enjoyed them way more than I've disliked. And that is a lot to be saying in this day and age.
Yes, yes. Well, I will give this episode a strong 5 out of 5 Tivolian Hearses.
Strong, yeah. You strong. Know, not crazy or anything like that, but strong. Five, you know, a strong, perfect score. Yeah.
No, from the opening kind of monologue to the closing whoa, Clara moment, I thought that was just a great, solid episode. Enjoyable, fun. It's what I love about Doctor Who. I mean, everything I love about Doctor Who was in this episode. Yeah, again, there were some plot holes. I was way willing to overlook those because it just everything just seemed to work. The flow was absolutely there from the beginning to the end, and it explained a lot of the stuff in the previous episode. In fact, I'm going to rewatch the previous episode Under the Lake and see if I can start to catch some of those things and see how it all ties together. But I enjoyed it. 5 out of 5. Let's keep rocking going forward, and enjoy this season. With that said, please follow us on the web, www.lonelytardis.com. Find us on the Twitters at Lonely Tardis. You can find us on iTunes and every other podcast network out there. We're going to try to make sure we get up on Spotify here, hopefully pretty soon, which would be a nice thing. Rate and review us on any of these if you can. If not, buy us all gifts, because that would be also comparable to rating and reviewing us. You can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find Steven.
At Steven Strom, StevenStrom.
Alrighty. You can find Marcus.
You can find me on the Instagram, on the Twitter, both as Annoyed Gamer. I do tweet some of my, Instagram some of my cool Doctor Who swag that I pick up from time to time. So that's always nice. I am looking forward to next week's episode, because next week's episode is Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones, and she's the girl who died.
Yeah, I'm interested.
I'm telling you, I think she might be the Doctor's daughter brought back.
Man, I would love it if that were true. I would love it if that were true, but we'll see. I have not watched the trailer this time. I'm avoiding watching the trailers until the actual episode. So, and you can find Sean at Sean Norton.
He doesn't get a shout out. No, bloody vacation.
You can find Sean. He's always on vacation, isn't he? He missed the first episode, almost missed the second episode, made it for last week, finally.
He's a friggin' part-timer. There's, you know, there's no way we need to keep on, giving him shout-outs. I mean, you know, it's all love. It's all love. He's a busy boy and deserves his vacation.
Please come back next week. We love you guys. Thank you for listening to The Lonely TARDIS.
Goodbye.
Bye.